What's good, Kansas City? Chiefs Kingdom. This is Players Only, the debut show of Players Only, the roundtable discussion. Three to Hardway here in the studio at 610 Sports. Got Sean Barber, former Chiefs linebacker, Joe Mays, former Chiefs linebacker, amongst the several other teams as well. And this is Danan Hughes, former wide receiver. Just to put it out there, fellas, love you guys, but I hate defensive guys. So I don't know how this show is going to go when you got the guy over here, the one offensive mind, the smarter of the three because I played offense, hating defensive guys. So this is a like a tug of war for me. This is going to be a battle, I can see. But we're going to have some good times. Joe, why don't you tell the listeners about you and what you bring to the table, about your history?
Cool. Well, Joe Mays, born and raised Chicago, Illinois.
Chi-town.
Yeah, man. Played eight years in the NFL. You know, I played my first two with the Eagles. Played three with the Broncos. Played a year with the Texans, a year here with the Chiefs in 2014. And a year with the Chargers after that. So, you know, I had 8 years experience, 8 years to live my dream. And now, you know, being on air, being able to sit with you guys and talk a little bit of football and, you know, tell stories, I think that's what it's all about. You know, giving the listeners something, you know, that's completely different, something that they don't normally get a chance to listen to. That's why I'm here, man. That's why I wanted to be a part of it. And I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm looking forward to see where everything lies.
Absolutely. And Joe played with one of the greatest quarterbacks to play in the NFL, Tim Tebow. He talked so highly about Tebow before the show. We're going to get into that a little later, some of those stories. But Barbershop, what you got?
Barbershop, a.k.a. S. Dot Barber.
A.k.a. Sean Stradamus.
Oh, we know that Sean Stradamus come back from that 35-point prediction.
That's personal now. You know, Nostradanin was out there before Sean Stradamus. We're going to have
Nostradamus. Yeah, we can talk about it. Nostradamus never picked the offense to score 35 points a game, so your crystal ball was a little shady.
Uh-oh.
That crystal ball, you needed some wax and glue on that thing because I was seeing clearly and you won't. So, yeah, I took your name.
Dang. Punking me for my name?
From the get-go, right from Jump Street.
No wonder why I hate defensive guys.
Well, S. Dot Barber here, man. You know, I bring a crew of guys with me. I'm representing Arrowhead Pride Radio. Myself and Pete Sweeney, we come in, we in the radio station all the time. So
Pete's the better half.
Pete is the better half, but I'm the enforcer. I'm the muscle behind the thing. So I kick people out of this booth when they don't say what we like. So you just know that's been done before.
All right.
So
you putting out the
too much conflict. Hey man, I did the same. Listen, it's certain things in life you got to put that warning shot. The warning shot is you complain and you disagree with me and Joe too much. Joe gives me the eye, and then at break time you get your butt up out the studio.
Hey, I ran through some wedges back in the day. Now, hey, I'm all right. I can handle myself.
Hey, that wedge play was I miss it.
Yes, that's the part of the game we miss definitely. Us old timers, but. And this is Danan Hughes, played 6 years with the Kansas City Chiefs, played some pro baseball before that, and I've been in Kansas City, for 25 years now. And unfortunately...
Dang you, old.
I know. Unfortunately, the last Chiefs home playoff game was my rookie season 25 years ago. So a lot has happened over the course of that time. Been very, very fortunate, very blessed to... still be a part of the Chiefs organization with the Chiefs ambassadors and having one foot in the locker room and the gracious people here at 610 and Spectrum Sports and all throughout the Midwest allowing us to have a voice on these airwaves, talk about our old days and mix in some great stuff that's going on here. But as Joe alluded to, the origin of this show, kind of the mindset behind what we have here this week and every Thursday, I should say the next two Thursdays thereafter, is about a transparent lens into a player's mindset on and off the field, all three of us being former Chiefs, former NFL players. We will have mainly an NFL perspective, but it's about just getting behind the scenes. Those questions that the fans would like to hear or would like to be a part of in a conversation if they were sitting around Chiefs players when it wasn't about being politically correct. It wasn't about the canned answers that was out there, but it was about just the genuineness of their lives. What are they thinking inside the locker room and so on? So we got multiple topics to tackle about that, but I will tell you this, and we're going to talk about the Chiefs and Colts and the history. how I got into this business, guys, and I know each of us have a different story. How I got into this business, actually, back in the day, this was pre-concern about players and what they're doing out in the community and so on. Marty Schottenheimer and Carl Peterson actually opened the door and embraced players having their own radio shows. So back in the 90s, it all started, I believe, with Derek Thomas. Derek Thomas burst on the scene in the late 80s, had a radio show that he showed up to every Monday. Tim Grunhard had one, Bill Moss. I mean, the list goes on and on. Vaughn Booker, and then the doors, the floodgates opened. So DT had a radio show for several years. And we used to go on and be guests. It was the big party in town. Obviously, after a Chiefs win the next Monday, you'd have that 6 to 7 time slot. And DT decided deep into his career that he didn't want to do it anymore. And I was a broadcasting major, and they opened up the door for me and Donnell Bennett to have a radio show on Mondays. You know, now Donnell was, you know, second string, third string, fullback behind Tony Richardson and those guys. And I was a fourth receiver, kamikaze knucklehead on special teams. But the city embraced us. We had a great time, and it kind of lit the buzz for me to be a part of the media side and move on to calling college football, college baseball, college basketball games, and then obviously being on these weekly shows. You can hear me every Tuesday morning on Fesco Show, the segment, the Chiefs segment, usually around 8:30 a.m. in Barbershop. And Joe, what days of the week are you guys on?
Well, we got the Monday morning quarterback at 3 p.m. on Monday.
Quarterback or linebacker?
Monday morning linebackers.
You know what? Still, you don't even know.
That's still
you don't even
to
know
determined.
What position you played.
I mean, we changed the name up a few times.
Yeah, it's been quarterback. It's been linebacker. It's been Sean Mays and Joe Barber. It's been pretty much everything that you could possibly think of. Shout out to my man Carrington. So, I mean, at the end of the day, the name is the name, and whatever that name is that day, that's what.
Yeah, then I come back on Tuesdays from 6 to 7 with my man Pete Sweeney, Arrowhead Pride Radio. Now. You know, we got tonight on Thursday, players only, and then I come back on some of the Fridays from 10:30 to 11 for another quick kind of a recap right before we go into the game on the weekends.
Joe, let's get into it about Kansas City. The first topic I want to talk about with you guys is the impact of being in Kansas City. Obviously, Joe, you played here for 1 year. You played many years in the NFL around several teams throughout the country. Talk about why you're still here in Kansas City. What's the draw that after all those times and all those different experiences, you felt like Kansas City needed to be the hub for the Mays family?
You know what, man? The decision to stay here, it was all because of, you know, us wanting to be settled. You know, we had been traveling from team to team, state to state, and, you know, we couldn't find that place to make a house a home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we figured, you know, right after I was done with the Texans, I said, look, the next place we move, we're going to buy a house. We're going to get settled there. And that's just going to be the story, just so we can get settled, start growing our roots. And, you know, Kansas City came a knocking, and, you know, they offered me a contract. I definitely didn't say no, you know, because of Andy Reid and, you know, him giving me my first opportunity in Philadelphia. I couldn't say no to him when he gave me my opportunity here. So, you know, it turned out to be the greatest decision for us because we've been to both big cities and small towns. I grew up in Chicago, went to school in Fargo, North Dakota.
Yep.
So I've been
The Bison.
Winners of 7 of the last 8 national championships. It's a dynasty. Yes. Yes. That's what they call a dynasty. But, you know, being in, you know, all the different type of atmospheres, the big cities, the small towns, we felt like Kansas City was right there in the middle. It's a great place for our kids to grow, great place for, you know, for them to just, you know, grow at a good pace and not feel like they had to rush through their childhood.
You know what's interesting? You mentioned it just there, your ties to not only Kansas City and the reason why you came here, but your ties to Andy Reid mm-hmm. and how that's a factor. And I know both of you guys had the pleasure of playing for Andy at some point in your careers. And it's just amazing how that works out, where it's not only that you valued a city, but you valued a relationship with a coach in a business that's kind of cutthroat,
mm-hmm.
but you saw the value over all the other experiences and relationships you've had with other coaches. You felt like this was a place, a hub, a core that you wanted to be a part of. And it was basically on a new coach that just happened to come to town that you had some history with. And I know Barbershop, you also go back Well, what's your story as far as being here in Kansas City?
I mean, mine is kind of simple, man. Once my playing days was over, finished my 10th year with Houston, the Texans. We had, you know, when we came here to Kansas City in 03, it was the first really big contract. So we had a, you know, pretty nice real estate here. The price of living here was so lovely. It was almost impossible to get back to like that East Coast, West Coast, living in a big city, paying four or five times the amount in property tax and the price of living being sky high for, you know, just half the property and stuff like that, man. Kansas City, the fans, and I got six kids, and so all of them being school age, when you talk about—
Six!
Yeah, man, one more than five.
I got five.
Look, six.
Five on it.
Man, so for these six kids, man, the type of education they got in the Blue Valley District and, you know, overall in Kansas City, man, you can't beat it. And so when you're trying to raise a family, man, those Midwest values count. So Kansas City was made for me.
That's awesome, man. I really appreciate it. Obviously, the foundation that was set here with Lamar Hunt and the Chiefs organization is something that burns deep in our hearts. But we're going to go to our first break, guys, and get deeper into some extra stories. Like I said before, Tim Tebow, a great quarterback for Joe Mays. We're going to talk about him in the next segment. What's good, KC? We're back. Players Only, the debut here in Kansas City. Joe Mays, Sean Barber, and I am Danon Hughes. We've been touching on some good things now. We got Tim Tebow, Joe. But before we get to that, I had a little test, Joe. I don't know if anybody picked it up. This is Players Only. This is a Players Only show. We've been given the reins. They've handed over all the mics. No outside input. We got the doors locked. The window's shaded. It's just about players here. So I tested the waters just to see if everybody was coachable. Julio, our producer, Speck, is in there overseeing everything. I said, hey, you guys want to chime in just to see if they say yes? They said no. They're very coachable back there. It was all a test. Thank you very much. It's our platform each Thursday, tonight, next Thursday, and the following Thursday. Three nights. Three the hard way. Three nights.
Yeah.
Hopefully, before and after some Chiefs wins and on our way to the Super Bowl and that last one, which would be a special show. If you want to follow us, you got at Sean Barber 59 on Twitter, at DA Hughes Guy 83 on Twitter as well. And obviously, send in any kind of messages, any kind of questions at 610 Sports KC on Twitter.com. And we'll try to get those and tackle them as well. But Joe, you talked about one of the greats that you ever played with. Barbershop played with Trent Green a couple of times. Some other quarterbacks I played with, a marginal guy and Joe Montana. But you had the best, Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
Tell us about your experience with Tim Tebow.
I mean, you know, it was just a great experience, you know, having the opportunity to play alongside Tim Tebow. I mean, when you got a quarterback on the opposite side of the ball that makes sure that as a defense, you're going to play 85 snaps a game. You appreciate that quarterback so very much.
That's the lens you – that's how you had to spin it.
Yeah, that's how I'm going
to
spin it.
You saw it as an opportunity to play more plays on defense. See, as an offensive guy, I might see it a little differently, but you're saying in your brain that's how you played the tricks on yourself?
Yeah, I mean, and if you can't – and if you can't hear it in my voice, that I'm definitely being sarcastic. That was the entire thing about playing with Tim Tebow. We knew going into every single game, look, you know, we're not sure what we're going to get from Tim Tebow, but at the end of the day, we got to be prepared to play 80 to 90 snaps a game. Now, people, if you're not really into football or you don't pay attention to the snap count, the average number of plays per game is about 60,
mm-hmm. 65.
Yep. We play 85 to 95 snaps a game, I would say, for about a good eight-week stretch.
Joe, do you know that you could have had a chance that if you were on special teams, I know you were on special teams, a hard hitter, right? You know, one of those guys that I would have dreaded going against on special teams. You could have got 100 tackles in a game. You could be, like, on the Mount Rushmore linebackers by playing with Tim Tebow. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. You can get about 115 tackles a game.
How many ice tubs were filled with defensive players after those games because of the wear and tear.
Man, every single cold tub.
I mean, you guys played an extra season, basically.
Oh, yeah, pretty much. Every single cold tub was filled up with defensive guys, you know, down to their neck. and then when it came to ice bags, I mean, we had ice bags on, you know, knees, elbows, ankles, any joint you could think of. We had that. We had ice bags on, you know, in the meetings, after the meetings, headed home. It was just one of them. It was really a knockdown, drag out fight every single game, and we were prepared for it.
And what was the conversation? So behind the scenes, like we talked about, we're being transparent.
Yep.
What was going on behind the scenes? You know, you have your little pockets in the locker room, the little cliques that get circled up. And or in the meetings, and you got Tim Tebow as your leader at the quarterback position. What are you guys chatting about on the sideline, in the locker room, preparing for each game?
Man, I think, you know, just leading up to the game, you know, as soon as Monday hit or as soon as Wednesday hit and we get the game plan and we see who we're up against, we're like, all right, so their defense is pretty solid. Tim probably not. He's probably not going to do much for us this week. So we definitely got to be prepared to play, you know, however many plays, whatever we got to do in order to get the job done and get the W.
So you had to game plan for the other team and your team. You had to game plan for your offense as well.
Yeah, we had to game plan the game plan. it was super important because look, if we're not in it mentally, we're just going to get blown out every single week. So we had to definitely, you know, pay attention to every single thing, every single detail, minor detail, do a little extra running because we know we're going to be out there for a long time.
Uh-huh.
It was just one of them things where, you know, we knew exactly what we were getting into. Just got to show up. Let's get ready to play.
And you guys came to Kansas City 2011, I believe.
Yep.
Tim Tebow had a great day. Two completions. That was pretty special. They wind up winning, so I don't know which one's worse, but I have to imagine, as a wide receiver, I know it would be frustrating to play for in that type of environment when you know, he's only going to complete one or two passes. You said he had another game where he completed eight passes.
Yep, against the Dolphins.
You know, I was a physical receiver. I like to be in the run game and so on and so forth, so I might not have been as affected as a Kevin Lockett or Joe Horn or, you know, the great receivers we had here in Kansas City, but could you imagine Tony Gonzalez, Barbershop, you played with Tony. Could you imagine Tony Gonzalez being in offense and you being on the defensive side and you having to deal with what Joe had to go through?
Yeah, man, I was sitting over here. I was actually getting a little heated over here because my man Tim Tebow, man, he's one of my brothers in faith, right? He's, you know, football, family, but faith comes before all that.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't a great quarterback, but he might have been one of the greatest competitors out on the field. I mean, he definitely showed that in that playoff game versus the Pittsburgh Steelers, taking on the postseason wins. I think he did things the right way as far as off the field. He was one of the hardest working guys off the field. He let his faith be shown on his right on his shoulder.
Spec, can you give me a violin, please?
We can appreciate all those things about him.
We got a violin.
Now, the problem with you, Dana, and the rest of you wide receivers – You it's that mean mentality.
I wish I could hold a violin right now.
That mean mentality, like, you want to, hey, you got to throw me the ball. What about winning? He was a winner. He won in Florida. He won when he got to the league. Now, he didn't do it the conventional way. He didn't throw it for 450 yards a game. But if you look at his win-loss.
See, this is why you and I fail to get along all the time.
Because you're trying to score touchdowns instead of winning ball games.
No,
he was concerned about winning
no.
ball games. And because he didn't need you to catch the ball, and he was okay running the ball and controlling. If you kept him within 7 points at the end of the game, Tim Tebow was going to find a way to win that ball game.
He was going to find it like Peyton Manning did to y'all in 2003?
Tim Tebow is who the discussion is on. Tim Tebow was going to find a way to win the ball game, and the fact that he didn't need receivers makes offensive guys like you that selfish mentality.
How come you just skipped over my question? Referencing, I was trying to find a parallel.
Okay, you want to know
and
about the 03?
It seemed like you was talking about
the 03 season?
In 03 when
yeah,
there was
let's
no
talk
punts.
Let's talk about the no punt game. So we have a lot of fans that were sitting on the sideline here in Kansas City wishing the defense get the other team to punt. Well, guess what? There were some fans in Indianapolis wishing their defense made the Chiefs punt. Neither team, neither fan base got what they want. But you know what the Indianapolis fan base got? They got ball security. Priest Holmes dropping the ball. And they got their receivers not needing to push off Tony Gonzalez in the end zone.
You know
it causes a field goal.
You know what I got in that game? Whiplash. Because I kept looking back and forth down the field when y'all
both
couldn't stop
teams.
Nobody. My neck
both.
Was hurting.
What
it's like watching a tennis match.
The Colts defense couldn't stop us. We couldn't stop the Colts. So both defenses, I had 10 tackles, two tackles for loss, as a matter of fact.
Oh,
so
yeah, he liked to throw them stats out there.
You know, he's trying to feel himself a little
one
bit.
One of 11. As a defense, we didn't get it done. So those stats, you know, like I said, if I had 20 tackles, it wouldn't have mattered, right? Because at the end of the day, we were trying to stop them.
Did you force a fumble or anything? Couldn't you do that?
I just now said that they did not turn the ball over. And so you look at two equally matched teams. Both had top-ranked offenses, and both had bottom-ranked defenses. So the difference in that ball game was they didn't make the mistakes that offense made.
But, hey, but for real.
For real,
making
though.
Tackles is different than making plays. You couldn't make a play. I mean, I get my nephew out there to go out and tackle somebody.
You didn't hit the two tackles for loss? How many tackles? You think those just come from a linebacker position just making tackles for loss?
Nah, they don't come easy.
They don't come easy, bro.
Man, y'all.
Bruh.
What about a turnover? Can we get a turnover?
Hey, man, I stripped it. I tried to.
Trying, heck.
Yeah, you tried it. You tried to create, it's called a turnover for a reason. You try to take it away. Sucker.
Oh, my gosh. At least you played again. You know, Peyton Manning was in that game. Couple of Hall of Famers, Marvin Harrison also.
You ain't played since the Ryan ball Milger? Became a you still play with a pigskin. The ball got – you don't even know what it was like to feel a real football be thrown at you.
Hey, I got in the game right after leather helmets, right after, a couple years after.
I was just going to say but before.
We talking about Tim Tebow, obviously bringing up Peyton Manning. This game this week, and just overall – in general, we're going to talk about the importance of the quarterback position. We got now Patrick Mahomes, the MVP of the 2018 season, obviously here in Kansas City, but there's still importance overall about the quarterback position. We're going to talk about that next. Welcome back. It's 1,000 on the 30s. Text the word FILTER. That's filter. Text the word filter to 72881. That's FILTER. You could be the $1,000 cash winner in the national contest. Message and data rates may apply.
I did it.
Barbershop and those guys thought I couldn't spell.
Hey, man, we've been on the other side of this.
You guys made me a little nervous there.
We seen Fannin can't spell sing. He's S-I-N-J. We seen C-Dot mess up with team. T-E-A-A-A-M.
It's like T-Rich was out on the draft talking about J-E-T-E.
Oh, my God. Oh, man.
That's Jets, man.
The simplest words. The simple words are the ones that cause the problem.
I got filter right.
You got it right, bro.
I got it right. I'm good.
Yeah, you did. Good job, man.
Maybe you are smarter than I thought.
Hey, offensive guy, you know we smart.
Before you brought up Richardson, though, it was just the studio guys that messed up.
Oh, now it's like the first thing that came to mind. You know how the locker room is.
Yeah, I do.
You know, I mean, we had cats get, you know, obviously get arrested. You got guys, you know, we had a guy that on the side. We had a guy that started a clothing line barbershop, and the pockets were the opposite direction. So you almost look like you was in a straitjacket.
Oh, Lord.
Man, he heard about that for the rest of the season.
Yo, I had a dude that went into the shower with the guys. And the guy, you know, you been there taking a shower. He turned it on cold, right? He turned it on cold. And it was funny, joke. Next week, the guy came in. He turned that thing on scalding hot. And the guy came out of the shower like, man, what are you doing? And he looked at him and said, hey, man, last week somebody put it on cold on me. I didn't want you to catch ammonia. He was trying to say I didn't want you to catch ammonia. Everybody was like, man, what is wrong with you?
And ammonia. He was dead serious.
Oh, dead serious.
Ammonia. You didn't know ammonia is like you that's a stronger
that.
Cold
yeah you catch
than pneumonia
when you turn the water on cold.
Ammonia.
Oh, man, that's what kind of jokes going in locker room.
Oh man. Well guys, we teased about the quarterback importance, and obviously you guys come from a different perspective. But just talk about the communication importance. I'm an offensive guy. We're at Arrowhead. The noise doesn't affect me. Everybody's pretty much quiet when the offense is on the field. But from a defensive perspective, how important is it for you guys? I guess the misnomer is that communication is just as important on both sides of the field. Obviously, you hear the audibles and everything that goes on with the quarterback. But you guys, from a defensive perspective, how is communication a factor for you guys as a home team and then as an away team?
Well, I think, you know, like you're saying, if you're the home team and you're trying to check in and out of stuff, you know, you see the offense getting a certain formation, and sometimes we have automatic calls. So when we see a certain backfield set, we see, you know, slot formation, we see spread, we want to check into an automatic call. And so trying to get that automatic call to the D-line and then back to the secondary to be spread out, sometimes we just do simple hand signals. Well, as you know, the Eagles, the Colts, the Chiefs, everybody who's come from this Andy Reid, they shift motion back. That creates a lot of anxiety on the defensive side of the ball because now, you know, we had to check the slot, but then you go to pro formation. Or you shift to spread, and then we get an automatic call, and now that guy motions back into a pro set. That caused a lot of, like I said, some anxiety on the defense side. And you want to make sure that when you're yelling up to the D-line, you know, pirate calls and different stunts and adjustments, you want to make sure those guys are getting it. And so depending on how loud the crowd is, it really affects your confidence level in the guys in front of you. And then as a linebacker, if you think the guy's playing too deep and you got a little underneath stuff, that's a whole different a drop you're going to take, whether it's cover three, cover four, or whatever. So everybody just got to be on the same page. And the way the crowd gets involved does you know, that can really hamper a team's communication.
So from that perspective, you guys break the huddle. You're in the huddle. You break the huddle with the play and your defensive setup. Are you guys getting calls – or giving or getting calls from the defensive backs as well as the D linemen? Are you guys just giving forward calls towards the front four?
So me and Joe as linebackers, first thing we want to do is we want to get this front set. So we already know the call. The call is under two banded zero. So right when the formation come out, we know this defense is going to be we're going to call the strength to the tight end. Tight end goes one way. We close it right. And then the secondary, they're looking at the passing strength. So they see both receivers go one side. So they might go Sally or Lulu. You know, they'll make their cover calls.
But are
calls.
You listening to that as well?
I don't need to hear that call.
You don't need to hear that.
Okay. I'm trying to get the front set to play the run first and foremost. Well, then as our, you know, as you open up your vision to see other the wide receivers in the backfield set, well, we might have to make a certain adjustment because I got the B gap, but I got flat coverage.
Gotcha.
And I can't cover both, so I might need to take the end and get him a bank call or a cat call or something to get him in the B or C gap so I can, you know, now play the boot or go play the flat or something like that. So It's a series of progression of things that, you know, but it starts with calling the front, right?
You know what? And that's very interesting because you talk about having the dual responsibilities from that linebacker position. And just for the general fan, you think about the All-22 film version or looking from down on the field and looking at the different positions. Barbershop talked about being a linebacker, having the responsibility of playing the B gap, which is between the guard and tackle, in run. But then possibly also having the responsibility, if it's a pass, of going from the B gap all the way out to the flat. There's also situations where Barbershop's favorite coverage is cover two. Where
Tampa two.
Yep. Where you have to chase the guy down the middle of the field, whether it's a receiver, number three, a receiver, or a tight end. Joe, the complexity of that, from that linebacker position, mm-hmm. and then factoring in coming into Arrowhead as a Colts player and as an opposing player. You played for the Broncos and several teams that have come into Kansas City. Talk about that dynamic.
I mean, you know, it's crazy because, I mean, at the end of the day, you are playing a game, so you try not to let a lot of emotions in, so you try not to let the crowd, you know, factor in what you're trying to do. You want to go in, you want to be focused, but, you know, it's something about just hearing that crowd noise, it gets that blood boiling, but you know, sometimes when it happens and it gets boiling too much, you may not pay attention to the call, which, you know, I play with a lot of guys that, you know, instead of them listening to the call, they more so, you know, focus on the energy they get from the crowd.
Gotcha.
Well, I mean, that's good. I appreciate you being, you know, energized and ready to go. But if you don't know what you're doing, how are you going to be successful? How are we going to be successful as a defense? So it was always about just making sure that we know our calls. We know the rules to each and every call. And not, you know, not letting anything, you know, kind of catch us off guard.
And we saw that take place specifically at a Rams game when Marcus Peters came out off the bench to go have a confrontation with one of the fans, and one of his teammates have to pull him back to the bench area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So not only did Marcus Peters show his mind with it, but whoever that teammate was
took their focus
off the game and stuff like that. And, you know, those type of things are just, you know, it's crazy to just – How hard it is to play the game. The last thing you can do is let fans get in the way.
So going back to on the field, though, and adjustments on defense, obviously how difficult it has to be in Arrowhead.
Yep.
I'll go back a couple of games. Eric Berry's on the field for the Chiefs. He's screaming at other defensive backs, and I even think there might have been a linebacker that was mixed in there,
mm-hmm.
in regards to coverage. Now, when you hear somebody vocal, a leader, from the defensive backside, so your backsides are facing them. You are not looking at them, but you're hearing their voice possibly. In Arrowhead, I have to believe that's very difficult. Yep. But you're hearing his voice about those adjustments. With Eric Berry, using that as an example, his leadership on the field, having that type of force behind you directing traffic, how difficult is that? And then playing a full-speed play 10 seconds later.
Yeah, so it's a positive and negative with EB. EB, he has a coach's mentality, so he's seeing things a lot. He might see things beyond just the average. It's not just a slot formation. Mm-hmm. It's a slot formation with a nasty split. He sees a certain running back offset an extra half a yard. He sees the tackle leaning back in his stance, so he's predetermined it's going to be a pass. His brain works on a higher plane than most guys when you talk about just seeing a certain formation. So you hear EB calling out a certain play he thinks is going to be, and if you're not used to hearing his voice, that can probably throw a linebacker off a little bit because you're used to hearing Sorensen or you're used to John or whoever it is back there.
And that may not be as emphatic.
And that guy's comfortable with just letting you, kind of float and be in your position. He knows you know what you're supposed to do. All right, and now you're just playing your position. But having that like a coach's mentality telling you, hey, man, be ready for this screen draw, or be ready for this waggle right. Mm-hmm. Number 13 is he too tight. So watch him going across the field. Make sure you reroute him over the top, And so he's getting your ear on a lot more detail than you used to, having the freelance.
But it's like playing with LeBron James. You're the Lakers with a lot of young talent. And now that he's out.
You left to your own demise.
You left to your own.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and whenever you hear guys yelling in the back end, more than likely they're saying something that you already know. Because as a linebacker, we got to know everything. We got to know where each and every individual is on the field. We got to know where our help is. We got to know what the D-line got to line up in, whether it's over front, under front, flex front, whatever you want to call. So to us, whatever they're saying on the back end is basically something that we already know. So it was extremely important for the linebacker group to get the D-line going because, those guys, when it comes to, communication and trying to get them lined up, man, it's like they got clogged ears.
You know what's cool about this aspect of the game? This is an insider's view. I always talk about having a different lens, being able to see the game of football and for me, baseball from a different lens. Doesn't make me any more special, doesn't make me a better, a better fan or whatever. But I think, you guys tell me if you can attest to this. I think the complexities of the game, the lens that we see the game through, doesn't allow us to be a true fan of the game. Doesn't allow us to be like, for me, I guess I'll speak for me, it doesn't allow me to be happy watching a game because I see all the holes. Mm-hmm. I see all the issues and who didn't do what. And you have some fans that are screaming. I used to sit in the stands with the fans and they recognized me. So they'd be like, Danen, what the heck what are they doing out there? He was wide open. And I'm like, no, he wasn't. Mm-hmm. He wasn't wide open. He did it right. It was basically an illusion. But, one of the benefits of growing up through that sport is that I get to watch all 22 players on the field for that 10 seconds, 30 seconds or whatever. And I can tell you just about what every player on that field offensively and defensively did right after that play.
Mm-hmm.
And who did something wrong in most times. You can't, as a player, you don't really get a chance to really engage and, you don't see former players with face paint on and going to games because you don't enjoy the game at that level. You enjoy watching guys compete.
Right.
But, am I alone on this boat with that whole mindset as far as enjoying the game in a different way?
I mean, nah, you're not alone at all. I mean, the thing is, we just have a different perspective just because we play. So for instance, for a linebacker pre-snap, we look at different keys.
Mm-hmm.
What are the linemen doing? How tight are they? What are their splits? Is the lineman sitting back on their hands? Are the linemen leaning on their hands? That right there tells us running pass. We look at the running back. How deep is the running back? If he's 5 yards, that's more of a chance for a play action pass, maybe just, passing game. But if he's a little bit deeper, that gives them enough time to get to the line of scrimmage with a head full of steam. So it's just different things that we're able to tune into and pay attention to and instead of us, just being just a normal fan and just watching the game.
And you know what, Joe? I think next week, if not next week, then that final week, I want to talk about that kind of lens, watching the game from that perspective and the tips and what goes into being a student of the game of football from a football perspective. But after this break, guys, we're going to talk about the Chiefs-Colts history. All three of us here, three different decades of Chiefs football, and we all have some kind of sour experience in regards to the Indianapolis Colts, especially coming in here to Arrowhead. So we're going to talk about that next. All right, we're back. Segment three on Players Only. Players Only Forum, Sean Barber, Joe Mays, and I am Danon Hughes.
I know this is the first episode, but we got to get some different music in. I mean, this right here is just real old school.
Come on, Julio.
NFL, like, I think this music plays.
I got a playlist for you, man. I'll shoot it to you.
Yeah, this is like Tecmo Bowl type.
Hey, now you get into my lane, man. What was wrong with Tecmo Bowl and Double Dribble and all that on back on the Nintendo?
I mean, besides the fact that it's 2019, I don't want to hear Tecmo Bowl music. I'll be fine playing the game,
man.
But
I'm like a fine wine barbershop.
When y'all had to get ready for the game, what y'all did? Y'all did the 5 hours, or y'all did the smelling salt bombs, or what y'all
smelling salt? I'm smelling salts era.
How many did you put in the cup? Did you do the bomb, or you put like 5 of them in the cup?
No, I just needed one. I just grabbed one, popped it.
Joe, you 5 hour energy?
You know what? I did a little bit of everything, man.
He's talking legally now.
Legally, of course. So I've done the 5 hour. I've done the smelling bombs where you put like 10 of them in a bottle.
Oh, man.
But I think the best thing that I've done that really gave me the most energy was what my man Doc used to take. Like, and B12? I don't know what it was.
B12 shots?
It was a little bit more than a B12 shot. You know, it was just a lot of energy stuff. I mean,
hey, you got Dawkins, what is he, crawling on the ground, man, like a panther. There's got to be something extra.
Oh, yeah.
Man, he was full of the Holy Ghost. Y'all know that Joker is.
I know, yeah.
That's what he was, dog.
He was full of the Holy Ghost and that dog juice.
And I think the dog juice was B12 shots. I remember he'd take a couple of B12 shots. He'd be like, man, this is it right here.
But I'll tell you what, when I go back to my days with the Chiefs, I was a locker mate next to Joe Phillips. Was a defensive lineman, big old defensive lineman, 6'5", 300-something pounds. My locker was right next to him. And he used to bring to every game a Ziploc bag of onions, garlic, every smelly vegetable or side or whatever, part of salad, whatever you want to call it, in a baggie. And he would just eat it like it was an apple. He would eat each piece. And finally, I didn't say nothing as a rookie because I was, I'm a rookie. But finally, about my second or third year, I said, Joe, what in the world are you doing? Why are you eating? He's like, Danon, if they're thinking about how bad my breath smells, that's one step I got on them.
Is that the offensive lineman you said?
He was a D lineman. So he was yours. So you was about to say something about offense.
Yeah, because they do smell.
Talking about smelling. Earlier, you made reference to the no punt game, and you actually tried to doll it up like y'all played some series, like you was bragging about aspects of that game when the other team didn't punt.
Again, Dane, I'm a team guy. The team, we didn't do enough. Our job as a team is to score more points than an opponent. We didn't get it done as a team. We didn't get it done.
So we all have some kind of history with the Chief Colts matchup.
Barbershop,
you talked about
nightmares
about that game.
I got history with the Colts and Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck.
Peyton Manning was like Freddy Krueger, Elm Street.
I'll go back to the fateful night in Kansas City, January, I believe it was January 6th or January 7th, 1996, the playoff game.
That's a long time.
I was part, I guess, I don't know if I'm more responsible because that was the first of, unfortunately, several issues that we've had with the Colts over the years. But I go back to that game. People always ask me about that game. Obviously, Lynn Elliott was on the show and Fesco's show in the morning earlier this week. A great interview. If you had not gotten a chance to listen to it, a great interview. I did not remember. I remember never seeing him again, but I did not remember. I was kind of in a haze in that game. After the game was over, I was like, that totally shocked me that we lost that game 10-7. And I'm happy, I get to pat myself on the back on something that I don't remember doing, but he mentioned that I was one of the guys that tapped him on the helmet and tried to console him after the game, but I never saw him since. So I didn't know this story until he said it on air, which was cool. But I'll go back to that game because talk about the feelings after games and devastating losses. We played that game, we lost, missed the last kick to go to overtime, go in the locker room. To be honest, I was in a blur, don't remember much of anything. The next thing I remember was sitting in my car, looking at the steering wheel for about 30 minutes. No lie. My wife is in the car with me. She's the only person that came to the game with me. looking at the steering wheel, staring, just like in a haze. But here's the kicker. I had already had planned out the rest of the night. My wife was a big Prince fan. She loved the artist Prince. And Prince was playing a concert in Kansas City that night. So I had it already planned that we were going to go to the game, win the game, no big deal, celebrate by going to the Prince concert. Already had the tickets. She already knew. I knew she was amped up about it. My wife's not a big football fan, not a big sports person. She was sad, but I'm sure deep down inside, she still wanted to go see Prince.
Of course.
Right? So I'm sitting there mulling over whether I'm going to drop the bomb of, hey, I can't do this tonight. I'm out of it. I can't do it. I wind up taking her to Prince. So there were people that came up to me. I think I was the only Chiefs player there. If we had social media, I probably would have got cut the next day for people posting pictures of Danon Hughes after a devastating loss at a Prince concert. Thankfully, that wasn't the case. But I don't remember anything up until intermission. I mean, from the time I got in my car all the way through intermission, I believe it was at Kemper Arena, I don't remember anything about the concert. I remember kind of going to the bathroom and shaking myself up, waking myself up from the haze at intermission of the Prince concert and saying, hey, life is bigger than this game.
Yep.
You know, all the different things to kind of break you out of that mojo and enjoying the second half of the concert. But that was my kind of twisted kind of experience with the Colts. The most emotional game I ever went through, Barbershop, was the next year playing the Colts, and they beat us again in the regular season. I couldn't believe it.
I thought he was going to say he went to the MC Hammer concert.
Yeah.
Oaktown 357.
Stupid.
That back then, you know what I'm saying, they had Hammer pants. He had to wear his Hammer pants out.
But Barbershop, outside of getting the brakes beat off of you in that 2003 game, what do you remember?
Why you make it so personal? Why is it you? Why is it me? Why is it? It's a team.
It's about the team.
I was a part of a team that lost to the Colts. Like, you started all the bad mojo. Your little Bama team started all the bad mojo.
We're not talking about me now.
Well, that's what happened. So because
we're talking about you.
Yes, you're right. Because that 06 team started the bad mojo, the sheriff came in here riding on his horse. You know Peyton Manning, man. The sheriff, man. It was hard to beat the sheriff.
So I got a question.
At that time, he was riding high.
So that's your history. That's your experience.
Yeah.
That game. Any little tidbit from that game besides the multiple missed tackles and all that?
Ain't no multiple missed tackles.
There wasn't a missed tackle.
No, 10 tackles, two tackles for loss. You ain't hitting a bunch of missed tackles.
But it was 65, 70 plays in the game. What happened to the other 55?
So I was covering my man, sucker.
So do you know the defensive stats? Like the defense stats? Because I know you know yours, but it's a team game.
Hey, the defensive stats said to be continued.
To be continued. To be determined.
Yeah, we forced a couple on third and long.
It had the ... after it.
We was on the field. We was on the field. We held them a couple field goals.
And that's a win.
That's when you're playing against Peyton. I mean, the sheriff, man.
Yeah.
Now, Joe, you obviously weren't a part of the team. You came on to Kansas City the year after the 2013 debacle.
Mm-hmm.
So you were on obviously you had some of the hangover effect, maybe some chatter in regards to being up 28 points against the Colts and wind up losing that game. Do you remember anything? Obviously, it was the next season, but do you remember anything about that game or the chatter in the locker room the next year? And then you also had multiple run-ins with Andrew Luck. Talk about that.
Yeah, man, I remember that game. I remember watching that game and seeing how, how the Chiefs were able to just, give up that lead in such a short amount of time. And let the Colts come back and win that game.
Yeah.
I remember Bo having that nice toe touch catch back in the end zone. I'm like, oh, these guys about to win. Nope. Didn't happen. Luck brought those guys back and they won in the playoffs. So, you know what? Andrew Luck, when it came to playing against him, man, I kind of view him as Peyton Manning. You know, he was a young Peyton Manning. He was a young, pretty much head coach, out there on the field. You know, he knows exactly what you're doing. He knows what he wants to do. He knows how he wants to attack you. So, just playing a young guy that truly know the game and know about himself and know about his team, basically like Mahomes is right now. You know, that's how I view Luck back then. And, he was
special,
just one of those.
Talent.
Yeah, definitely a special talent, a franchise quarterback, a guy that you can depend on. I mean, I hated it.
I was going to ask Barbershop about some extra stories on that 2003 team. Kind of feel like it was like a double dragon, a karate It was like getting psh, psh, psh. Was the sounds of the game like that? If they had to mic you up in that game, was it really like you was playing a video game getting smacked around?
Nah, it was that Mortal Kombat? Yeah, Double Dragon. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? You don't know about Double Dragon. You too old for that.
Hey, guys, we are just about to wrap up our first and debut show of Players Only, but I want to get one or two keys from each of you guys this weekend, this Saturday, the most important game of the year, maybe of this Kansas City Chiefs organization. What are one or two keys you think they need to accomplish in this game?
I think the first key, and of course I'm speaking on behalf of the defense, is stopping the run. I mean, you know, the Colts, they were able to run for, I think, 150-plus yards last week.
Yep.
And that's how they were able to win the game. It was time of possession. So if you're able to get these guys off the field, stop the run, and put them into these passing situations, now you can allow the pass rush to apply pressure and, you know, try to get after, you know, some interceptions, some, you know, some sack, forced fumbles, you know, try to steal a possession here and there.
What about you, Barbershop?
My secret for the week, if you have an opportunity to get in your NFL Game Pass, September 17th, 2017, the Eagles offense versus the Chiefs defense here at Arrowhead. Watch that game. Watch what Frank Wright was doing as offensive coordinator versus Bob Sutton. That'll give you the keys to the game.
Ooh. And obviously, I believe the Chiefs offense can dictate in this game because I am Nostradanin and Sean is not Sean Stradamus. Don't listen to his key. Listen to mine. It's fake more news. Important. I'm an offensive mind. Defensive guys are just bruisers.
Oh,
Watches,
I'm going to leave it at that.
Dana watches Fox
Bigley's
News.
Bigley's coming in for his show.
Hey, no.
We're going to leave it at that, defensive guys.
We cannot.
We got time.
We got time.
It's time to break.
Bing, 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 bing.
Offense over defense.
Bing, 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 bing.